You're listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Welcome to our podcast, Brave Parent Podcast. And today we're going to take up where we left off. We started talking about the chapter of the book called Feel and Think, and we segmented it into two. We talked a lot about feel emotions last time and stress reactions and stress reduction, things like that. And today we were going to just take this entire visit and talk about cognitive health, which is the, the ability to help our children learn better. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we all seem to be concerned about. We're more concerned about their grades and their achievement than their learning. But I want to say, realistically, maybe we should be more focused on learning.
Yes.
Learning that gets them excited and learning that sticks and learning that keeps them motivated to become continual lifelong learners, which gives people a whole lot of energy and enthusiasm and optimism and outlook.
I love this because, you know, I think you said a very important part. Like, a lot of times we think about the results or the outcome when it comes to this area specifically, but it's the same way as like physical health, right? You can't have that outcome if you're not putting in that work and really putting in the structure and the time to develop it. But I don't feel like we really approach thinking, learning in the same way, all the time.
You know, like you, Lauren, I'm a continual learner and you know that. And when Hunter was your kid's age, and how old are your kids?
4 and 6.
Okay, just to remind the audience, yeah. When he was your kid's age, I was particularly influenced by a book called, I'm going to flip the name. Oh, it was called Punished by Rewards. And it might be a book for you to read, but it was really about how we have focused more on the reward than the learning itself.
Yeah.
And learning, you know, if you look back on agricultural times when learning was a luxury because we had the whole land to work, right? Even you look back on Michelangelo and what he did, like after his rock quarry job all day was to go in and dissect and look at muscles so he could learn how to sculpt. Like, that was a luxury that people wanted. And so the ideas that we have focused on reward have taken us away from the actual reward of learning itself. Mm. The reward being the grade or the getting into the college you want or getting into the program you want after high school, whatever it is, right? I always tell kids that grades are good. They're stored freedom. They give you some more leverage. Mm. To do what you want to do in life, because they do open some doors that might not be open. So of course you want to get good grades, but you also really need to realize that these opportunities to learn might steer you into doing some work outside of the regular curriculum.
Yeah.
You know, ordering a book that you're interested in because you stumbled upon it and in your sidelines you learned. So this whole cognitive science piece is a really big area of study. It's not my expertise. As you know, I'm a dentist and health educator, but it's an interdisciplinary study of, of mind intelligence, psychology, neuroscience, linguistics, anthropology, philosophy. So it's not something that we can just summarize in a 20-minute podcast, but I'll give you some tips. And Lauren, you can offer some up too, because you know, now we have learned that multitasking is not the best way to do anything, yes. Right? It's multitasking is a good way to screw up a lot of things at once.
Yes, I love that. That's so true.
But it is something that we have come to value because of our high-paced, distracted world.
Yeah.
If I can keep a conversation, if I can be working on the plane and watching a movie that I'm enjoying at the same time while I'm working, updating my PowerPoint for the next program going, I feel like I've really had a great flight and I can eat and drink at the same time. Like, but it's not the best way to do it.
Right? No.
We're all tempted to try to want to get a lot of things done at once. And when kids are carrying a handheld, and they're having full-on conversations with their friends or playing a video game while they're trying to learn something for school, it truly does detract. And we know this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do we, you know, how badly do we want to be the bad guy? So we can take a look at what would it take to get kids interested? And then also, how do we learn best?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on you know, as you look forward to your kids studying or with their computer, their tablet, their internet, their phone next to them, all the distraction that we have? Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's like you mentioned earlier, we're both extremely big into learning, and my kids know that, right? Because I'm always talking to them, even when they make a mistake or they slip up or do something, even an accident. What did you learn from this? And how can you apply this next time, right? Like, it's always one of those questions that I ask them. And it's easy right now because it is like they're a little bit more receptive towards learning in that way. But like you said, once the technology starts getting integrated, it's going to change. And it's interesting. My 6-year-old just wrapped up kindergarten, and it was surprising to me because we got a laptop at the beginning of the year for kindergarten. And I was not expecting that at all. And it just seemed early. And even when he would come home from school, he'd be like, "Mama, like, can I get on the computer? Can I play a game on a computer? Because it's loaded with all of these, you know, educational games." And sometimes I'll let them, but each time it's truly like, what is your intention going into this? And that's what I'll ask them. And the goal is to stay focused on what that intention is going in and not getting distracted by the other options, the other games, or whatever it is. So that's been a big method that I've at least implemented early on because I wasn't ready for this
yet. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. We used to have, when I was young, we had this slogan or saying that said, "We are who we are. The same person we are today is who we are tomorrow, except for the books we read and the people we meet."
Mm.
And I thought, well, that was really interesting. Now, if you think about it, kids aren't reading books as much. Mm. So of course, there's a whole plethora of information on the internet, but would you want your child learning everything there is to know on the internet? What if they decided to learn about sex on the internet? What if they decided to learn about, you know, because you can really, we have this thing in the research world that says we have confirmation bias. We have biases around what we believe, and you can find anything in the internet to support that. Like, when we get into talking about oral health, I'm going to tell you about the benefits of fluoride. If you already feel like fluoride's poison, we don't need it, and you look up the poison of fluoride in our water, are you going to get a whole bunch of information for sure? Where do you go to learn it? And we are not going to good sources. And so again, I leaving your child to learn unrestricted on the internet, in my mind, is dangerous.
Totally agree with that. Totally. Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's, you know how like on your phone, you can immediately pull up like searches and it'll show you like little snapshots, even without logging in, right? You don't even have to hit a password. Again, with my 6-year-old, he's reading now. He's starting to write, and he finds words really funny, like penis and poop and other things like that. So he's starting to get to that point where he types in words that he thinks are funny, and it's terrifying because I'm like, this is just the start. So then what about 8, 9, 10 years old when they have more of that openness to search for whatever they want and their curious minds and where they go? And I think it's really important to start establishing those boundaries now.
Even outside of the dangers that we're talking about, just the idea that when we learn something, it becomes part of, you know, when you think about it, you're starting with a clean slate, you've got a little kid, and as they learn, they start to think this is the truth, and they may not be getting the truth at all. So we have to be a little careful. Not the internet is a great source of information, but we need to help them filter. And when they're in a curriculum, like in school, we need to be able to trust that the curriculum given to them by the teachers needs their undivided attention, not necessarily them searching on the side for everything and again, getting distracted and going down rabbit holes. So if they're given assignments, that they learn how to stick to it.
So let me ask you this, because this is the thought that keeps coming up in my head and something that I would love to instill in the kids, and I try to, I don't know how to get it to stick. And that's the whole idea of critical thinking. Like, you can read, you can learn, you can hear whatever opinions you want, but the importance of stepping back and really evaluating your own set of beliefs, your own thoughts related to things, doing your own objective searches, like, how do you instill that in kids early?
I think that's a really, critical thinking is a really, really big subject.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my nephew graduated with a degree from an honors degree from University of Michigan in critical thinking and
in critical thinking, like there's actually a degree.
Yeah, he had an interdisciplinary degree in critical thinking and neuroscience, and like he combined three different biologies in critical thinking.
Wow.
But it's interesting that, you know, it's really root cause thinking, critical thinking, right? Is looking at asking those five whys. And that's something you can do with your kids.
Sure.
Why do you think that happens? I mean, you know, I'm a big on pediatric airway, right? So with my Endeavor group, which is an international group of us who are big, passionate people about changing the way the world recognizes airway disorders in children. Yeah. The other day I said, you know, we need to get into why. I mean, we're all into the mouth expansion and the formation of the airway, you know, the tongue box and all that. But let's say that the mouth breathing came from the stuffy nose, and the stuffy nose came from the allergies, and the allergies came from the gut microbiome changing. And what do we do to increase the diversity of the gut to reduce that atopic march that takes us from allergies to, you know, from ectopic dermatitis, which is eczema, to food allergies, to environmental allergies, to asthma. Like, and that affects this. And so when we're thinking about critical thinking, I went down a rabbit hole there, but just so that you followed me, the idea is that we continue to ask why, that don't be so quick to give them the answer to the question. I know it gets like, mom, I just want the answer because I've got other things to do. There are times when you just go, okay, like how badly do you just want the answer? Or can we talk about, you know, some other ideas here? Because getting into intellectual conversations primes them for learning. Mm-hmm. And one of the concepts here, and I was heavily influenced before writing this chapter in social, emotional, and cognitive health by a book called Make It Stick. I loved the book because it really broke down like how do kids best learn? Mm. And one of the things that we know about learning for adults and children is when you've contemplated the problem and you get the answer, you learn it by heart. So many of you right now are sitting here grappling with an issue in your life and you wish you knew how to solve it. And you, even in your unconscious mind, you're going to work looking for solutions to this dilemma. And when you finally get the answer, it's like, I went to the mountain and Moses delivered the tablets. I got it. And now you become almost impassioned about teaching people about it, mm-hmm. which is another way to learn.
Yeah.
To pass the knowledge on, to teach someone else, right?
Absolutely.
And so you're like, I just had this huge aha moment. And I totally got it. I can't wait to share it with you. And now you become a teacher, right? And so I think part of it is to get kids to think about the problem instead of answering it. We are in our effort to be experts, to
yeah.
be parents. We often want to tell them what we know. And it's great to impart some of your philosophies and things on kids. But if they ask you a question, one of the things you can do is just be more curious.
Mm.
You know, just to be more, tell me what do you imagine is the answer? Yeah. What have you thought about that might be a possibility? They might be like, oh, mom, really? Yeah. But the fact is that by engaging them in thinking about it, then when you go to say like, you know, here's what I know,
mm-hmm.
But let's look that up because now I'm curious because you yeah. just offered something to me.
Yeah.
And you get them engaged in the learning itself rather than, you know, I used to have a set of encyclopedias. It's not like it was easy. It was like, seriously, I'm not going to the dictionary. Just tell me the answer. And of course, my mom was an intellect too. And, you know, and my parents were both writers. And, you know, it was interesting. But I sometimes just wanted a quick answer. So you can say, how badly do you want a quick answer? Do you have a minute to talk about it?
Right.
You know, invite yourself into the conversation.
I'm laughing at that. Like that. And real quick, I just looked up the book, Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning by Peter C. Brown. Is that the one?
Yeah. And there's another one, Henry Rodinger.
Yeah.
Now I remember.
I remember obviously like the door-to-door salesman with the encyclopedias and how cool it was, you know, to own like a shiny encyclopedia. But then I also remember the very first time we got the encyclopedia on a CD-ROM and how cool it was, because instead of like flipping through things, you could like search very specific subjects, you know, and it was so exciting. And, you know, I remember, I mean, like, that's what I would turn to if I was curious about something. It wasn't the internet.
That's a good way to use the internet. If you're with your child and you're searching and you can even say to them, this is probably not a great source. Let's look for a really good source of material here.
Yeah.
Something that's peer reviewed or that's, you know, adjudicated or that is some legitimate. You know, if you're looking up health stuff, you might stick with the CDC. I don't know how you feel about the CDC right now, but the Center for, you know, it's like they're at least a body of science that's filtering out some of the garbage, right?
Yes.
So, I don't know. So anyway, I think the idea of engaging with your child in learning and also modeling for them,
mm-hmm.
instead of,
judging
things, sort of challenging your own beliefs in front of them, you know, deciding that your current knowledge isn't enough and that you're continually challenged by, you know, learning more.
Absolutely. 100%
with them about what you learned today, coming home from work saying, you know, I learned something really interesting today. I was curious about this. I looked this up. Here's what I learned. Yeah. Isn't that cool? And they'd be like, I guess. But what you're really telling them is I'm following my own passion for learning, right?
Absolutely. And like you said, having those conversations with them, we might not think that they're receptive toward it, but it is. They're going to remember that in some way or another, especially when it's consistent. So I love that.
Yep.
I am curious too, Susan, because I know, you know, in your book, and like you said, you kind of mix the feel and thinking together, but I know we talked a little bit about like the secret keeping aspect, even being related to this and the thinking. And I want to talk about that because as kids, especially, we just had that conversation with my kids this morning because one of them tried to whisper something in my ear. And I was like, we don't keep secrets, you know, we're very open. Like the other one can hear it as well. So I want to bring that up too.
Surprises, like a surprise party or something.
Yes.
Surprises, not secrets.
But okay. So that's a good way to word it. Surprises and not secrets. I like that.
If you say, I don't want to tell anyone, it's a secret that we're having this. Well, we don't keep secrets. Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful about how you choose your words, but yes.
And why do you feel like that's such an important piece of this as well?
Not keeping secrets?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it can lead to danger. It can lead to a lot of really guilty feelings, lead down a path to anxiety. I mean, there are none of us knows each other through and through. I don't know all of your thoughts. You and I are close friends, Lauren, but you know, we are open enough with one another to really expose ourselves and to be vulnerable.
Yes.
But there's a sense that if I really share exactly who I am, it's shameful. And kids don't experience shame until they're harboring something. So to reduce that level of shame, based thinking and have kids feel like no matter what I say, I'm loved is an important message. Now, I'll give you an example. Let's say that a child, let's go down the same rabbit hole we were going. What if they get on the internet and your son types in penis and he sees, I'll give you a better example because it's a real example.
Yeah.
Hunter came home from the fourth grade. This is before they carried any handhelds in the schools, right? And he got online. I never had child restrictions on my computers, which they don't now because I figured, you know, we're open enough and, you know, but he came home from school in the fourth grade with some website written on his hand that five boys made a pact and they were going to visit this one boy's dad's favorite website as a dare. And they came home and Googled a porn site and Hunter saw some horrific images And he came directly to me and crying and said, I don't know what I saw. I need some help. I don't know what I saw. And I said, let's look. And then I said, oh, honey, I'm sorry you saw this. I said, listen, I just want to teach you something right now. This is not real sex with real people. These are actors and performers who are getting paid to shock people. And they're not your people. But here's what I also know is that sex for you someday could be a beautiful thing. And if these are the images that you start locking into your brain about what this is supposed to be, it will never be satisfying to you. You need to, I won't be here always to save you. You're going to need to discipline yourself not to look at this, because this is not okay. These are not your people. This is not your arena. This is not your thing. And I'm very sad for the man who, this is his favorite website, your friend's dad. But, you know, then we had to talk about how do you imagine the conversation going tomorrow when you meet with your friends and they've all seen this website. And what I want you to know is, no, it doesn't matter what you say in that group, what you say to yourself about whether this is acceptable and how you want to learn it. Now, I use this as an example because had he harbored that secret, and let's say the secret is that our boy Bond is going to do this and we're not going to tell anyone. Yeah. And the next day it's this and the next day it's that. And pretty soon it's like they've got this whole secret light. Mm-hmm. And it can happen with all kinds of things.
Oh yeah.
Strangers touching children. Yeah. Don't tell anyone or I'll come back and kill your mother, whatever, right? That kind of thing creates sickness, long-term damaging, deep damaging stress reactions that cause sickness.
And that's why I think there's so much power behind the really instilling the independent thinking at an early age and the power behind that, because to think for themselves and to be able to think through if something has the potential to have more rewards or consequences, or, you know, is this a good secret to keep? Is this something I should be involved in? Are these people my people? The power behind that and the strength behind that. I mean, my niece went through that when she was 10, because she was, you know, the girls were starting to find that division and to tell rumors about each other. And she was getting a lot of rumors because she wasn't giving in. Like, so they were making fun of her for not participating in the rumors of other girls. And she stuck to it. She was like, this is not what I want to do with my time. She's very focused on like her softball and, you know, all her sports and her creativity. And, you know, she stayed like she was stuck on that. Like she was able to rise above it, find the power within that. And it was because my sister-in-law is constantly talking to her about making good decisions and thinking through things and protecting herself from it.
So now we're on that fine line of secrets versus keeping confidences. Because we want to keep some confidences. When I say, Lauren, I'm going to tell you this in confidence, and you say, Fort Knox doesn't go any further, right? You need to be careful.
Yes.
Who you're doing that with, right?
So how do you describe that?
Complete stranger says, I'm going to tell you something. I can give you great examples, but we won't go into it. But if a complete stranger says, I want to tell you something, but I don't want you to tell anyone, you go, you got it. I'm the kind of person that keeps really good confidences. And they say, I'm thinking of killing myself, or I would like to, you know, whatever it is. Now the burden is on you. And then you have to say, I can't do that, or whatever. So you have to be careful about that kind of thing, right? Again, it's that borderline of secret, but I think we need to continue to talk to kids about why secrets can be dangerous.
Yes. Because
they create shame.
Yes.
And usually our secrets are shame-based.
Yeah.
And there's nothing as humans that if we're there speaking with a whole heart, if you're sharing those personal pieces with someone who cares and loves you, again, choose wisely. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go tell your deepest secrets to a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
But we do need to have some go-to people. And if you're a safe place, Lauren, if you are not shaming your kids, you know, if your person says shame on you for even thinking such a thing, well, of course they're going to start to keep things from you. We teach our kids to lie and keep secrets, right?
That's powerful.
Okay, lay it down. I got my stuff too. Like, lay it down and I'm going to be here for you and let's work through it together. And
that's powerful. Like that right there is powerful.
Yeah.
Selection.
I was watching a movie on Delta on the airplane on the way here. It was called Fallout. And it was actually about a post fallout from a school shooting, a high school shooting. And at one point, this girl who witnesses so much is going through all this comes to her mom and kind of hugs her mom and confesses about all the things that she's done since then, all the inappropriate things. And you can tell her mom was just like, didn't know what to say, but instead of going, oh my goodness, what are you telling me? She just went like, thanks for telling me, processing, you know, like bite your tongue for a minute and just like be with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And
we're a little far off track, but the secret keeping thing, it does, you do stumble into it, especially with the internet.
Yeah.
You know, when kids are distracted and bullied and they're participating in ways that are dangerous, and you kind of have to keep the levels of lines of communication open best you can.
I think that's great to keep in mind, because it is, I feel like as a parent, especially in these days, you know, you do have that fear. And so it's that your words of wisdom there, I mean, like definitely something that's easy to put into place and to really establish that ongoing communication, but communication, lines of trust, and like you said, really no judgment or shame toward them then as well.
And only a couple more things I think we need to say about learning today. And that is that lasting learning is really effortful. It may be easy to cram for an exam and put it off to the last minute, even be carrying on two text messages, conversations while you're cramming, memorizing. Like we did a lot of memorizing in dental school about neurology and the nerves of the cranial nerves. And we had little acronyms and you could easily recount those to get a good grade. If you spent a little time learning an acronym and yet we didn't really learn it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you really wanted to learn the cranial nerves, that the, you know, seventh nerve is the facial nerve and what does it do and where is it and all that, you would really take a good look at each of those nerves and go into that. And that takes some effort. It's hard and it's important. And the other thing is, you have it for a lifetime then.
Yes.
But you need to keep using it, right? So to learn it and then to repeat it. So I say there, my high school math teacher was one of the brightest guys I know, would always say, repetition is the mother of learning. Mm. And he would repeat over and over. And it's true, right? When we repeat things, we know them by heart.
Yes.
So this book, Make It Stick, really points out that learning is effortful. It takes work and discipline to do it. Mm-hmm. And then you want to mix it up or interleave it. So if I was learning all 12 cranial nerves, I'd want to be going from the seventh nerve back to the third nerve, back to the fifth nerve, back to the 11th nerve, and like mixing it up and then coming back to it again and again and again. And flashcards work well for this because you can mix them up and you can come back to it and you can review them. And so that's an example, not every time, but it's an example of how to learn. For instance, we do hands-on learning for every child at every visit in our dental office. And it's a learning lab because I believe that it's not enough to see it and hear it, but doing it, seeing, you know, getting your hands on it. And one of the learning lab experiments is all of the like 55 sources of sugar that we see on labels today. And they're on flashcards. And on the front is the word and on the back is where it came from, you know, what's the source of the sugar, you know, how do they, more information on it so that they can leaf through it and pull out, and they're not going to get through all 53, but we might get them in 6 months at their next preventive visit and go, remember these flashcards? Pull out one and see if you know what, you know, it's like revisiting it from time to time. or keeping track of what they're learning and kind of revisiting. So you can make some fun things like that that are what we call interleaved, mixed up, that are repetitious and that are effortful, and then also continue to stay curious. You know, if we're going to do spaced repetition, ask first what they remember, get their brain kind of primed for it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, pull it out, pull the old flashcards out and say, let's see how much we remember, you know, if you're learning it with them or things like that. So that's kind of fun to teach them ways to do that. And then what you'll find is by the time they're in middle school and high school, they're doing some of those things by themselves.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then not only that, but referring back to another episode, what really helps thinking be successful for people?
Are you asking me what does? I think being able to use it for a purpose, right? You know, and it's interesting when I ask kids in school, because you ask a college kid, what are you majoring in? And why did you choose that? And some kids really find their stride when they get into their major because they're starting to learn things that they love to learn. And other kids are like, I just don't know if it's a fit. But it's really nice not to know exactly what I want to do later, but it's nice for kids at any level to say, you know, I'll say, what do you like about school? They might say lunchtime or recess. So instead of that, I say, what do you like to learn
in school? What's I like that.
Learning? And if they say, I don't know, you say, do you like science? Do you like math? Do you like reading? Do you like writing? Do you like creative writing? Like really asking them, what is it that they enjoy learning and sort of getting into that?
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun to continue to help kids go down the path. If you look at, we often as parents, here's a really interesting fact. Strength training. Do you know what strength-based training is?
Mm-hmm.
We're helping people fulfill their strengths. And what we find is that when people are happy and successful in the work they've chosen, they're usually in their sweet spot. It's their strength area. And oftentimes we make kids spend a lot more effort in the areas of their weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you have this much energy, and let's say you bring home your report card and the one midterm report card says you're not doing well in Spanish, or you're really you're not doing that well in physics. What do we do? Oh my gosh, you need to do well in physics, and you really need to focus this much of that energy on that so that you can make sure that your grades are up.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying, gosh, that's not necessarily your strength area. What is it you like about it? How can we make it more fun for you, you know, all of that, and get you through it with reasonable grades, and recognizing that if the glowing areas they like to study, if we could really focus more on that, maybe with their extracurricular learning, maybe giving them some exciting challenges outside of the regular curriculum. I'm not suggesting that you don't want your kids to bring home all A's and B's. That would be great. But we also need to pay attention that we need to fan the flames, add oxygen to their strengths.
Yes.
Rather than going, it's great that you're good in English, but I really need you to focus on math. That's your weakness. We do it naturally, right?
Yep. So. I totally agree. It's one of my passion points. 100% agree with that.
I love that book now, Find Your Strength. It's the Strength Finder analysis.
Strength Finder 2.0. Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but it comes with a version for kids.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So you bought the book and you can get into it. There's a version for kids, and I can't remember what the age it was, but I learned a ton. It was the first time when I had Hunter actually take the test. It was, you have it there? That's so cool.
13 years in human resources.
There you go.
Yeah.
But it was so interesting because then Hunter was in middle school. He took that test and I sat right there and I was shocked that his number one strength was competitiveness.
Mm.
He wrote about it in the book. Like it was a huge eye opener because I always was trying to massage his competitive nature to say, you know, I wanted him to be more amiable and help other people and be, you know, more conciliatory, not like competitive, like get out of my way, I'm doing this. But when I first realized that's a strength that I didn't have, I am a an achiever, but I'm not a competitive person. I want to bring everyone up with me. I don't want to get ahead, right? So I'm constantly trying to bring people along. He was an achiever, but he was a very competitive achiever. Fast. And I started looking at this as a strength rather than something he had to overcome. And it was really helpful.
So I love that.
I love that for kids.
Good tips. Yeah. I'm curious. I'm going to have to look into that. I'm curious at like the earliest age you can really do that. I think that would be fascinating. No, I love that. And Susan, we missed that. One of the most important parts of this too, is getting a good night's sleep, which will be a discussion of another episode.
I do need to mention that literally when you lose 90 minutes of REM stage sleep in a night, your cognitive ability, your ability to learn drops off 35% the very next day.
So tune in to the sleep episode on the podcast because it's a deep dive.
We'll cover sleep hygiene and sleep related breathing disorders, but it is a really important piece for parents. You know, we used to think that sleep was overrated. Now we realize it is so critically important. So 100%.
Well, if you have any questions for Dr. Susan Maples and you follow us on Instagram or Facebook, please be sure to leave those in the comments and she'd be more than happy to answer your questions. Any other words of wisdom to wrap it up?
Yeah, I love being with all of you and certainly love working with you, Lauren. So I'll see you next time when we talk about sleep.
Perfect. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible or wherever you choose to buy your books. Bye for now.